Welcome to a Bowes and Education podcast. In this podcast, we'll be discussing the power of storytelling with Trace Parvin. Trace has extensive experience as a primary school teacher, teacher educator, and has been president of the UK Literacy Association. Trace has an enormous passion for storytelling. Welcome, Trace.
Thank you.
So first off, tell me the difference then between reading a story and telling a story.
I first realised that students had a misunderstanding of what storytelling and story reading were and the differences between the two. Story reading, you are reading somebody else's words. You have a book in your hand and you're reading from the page. It can be very engaging and it can be done in an exceptionally formative way, but storytelling is very different. Storytelling is using your own voice, your own words, and possibly your own narrative structures as well. So there are no books, there are no supporting resources for you telling these stories. You are telling a story. And of course, that goes back to an ancient oral tradition of storytelling.
And something we still do, isn't it, in an informal way, maybe at home with our children, we recount stories, don't we? Family stories.
Family stories are huge resources for, especially for children. But yes, around the dining table or on a walk somewhere, you may come across a place that you used to visit as a child. And you might tell your children about the times when you were a child and went to these particular woods or that particular seaside and little events that might happen there. But yeah, family stories are massive.
And of course, as we grow older, we have stories in the classroom. But so going back to the difference between reading a story, which all teachers in primary schools absolutely do, read stories, and children even read stories to each other. But telling a story, why is it so important in the classroom? This may be a shift for some people listening to this, thinking, I read stories every day and, you know, I do a jolly good job of it. You know, I do voices and everything. It might take them out of their comfort zone to say, no books, no, oh, how am I going to tell a story? So why is it so important, though, in the classroom?
That's actually a really good question. The importance of storytelling, I recognised in my first or second year of teaching. It's the dynamic shifts. You haven't got the book that you're hiding behind. Mm. All you've got is yourself and your memory, either of an anecdote, a family history from your own childhood as a teacher. You've just got yourself as the resource, but it's the relationship as well that shifts with the classroom, where the children are focused on you as the performance. And that, as you say, can really take people out of their comfort zone.
It does, because I think, you know, teachers, we are performers. There is no doubt that we stand up in front of our 30 plus children every day. And to all extent and purposes, we perform, don't we? But then to take it on to this level of beyond, to my mind. So my background is not English teaching and storytelling. And I already thinking, yeah, I can tell some stories. But at the same point, feeling quite, this is taking my performance skills as a teacher onto a completely new level. Where do I start planning and things like that? So that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, the notion of planning is interesting. Kremin would talk about the seizing of the moment. Mm-hmm. And the seizing of the moment is identifying that opportunity as it arises. As you've said, we all do tell stories. I've done sessions with students. I've done sessions with experienced teachers with storytelling. And I always ask, who are the storytellers? And the teachers would never recognise themselves as being storytellers. And yet we all stand up in the classroom and we all do tell a story. Oh, says a teacher, I might be reminded of something that I did when I was in school. And you might tell the story in history, for instance. Mm. Not that we're going to go back to the Victorian times with our own memories, but we might tell stories about how schools were in the past, mm. how teachers behaved in the past. And that becomes a story that is being told in a different curriculum context, maybe. But it's those moments. The children used to really enjoy hearing about my exploits in school, where I might have been a little bit talkative as a child.
Surely not.
And how some teachers responded. And the teacher who... I mean, this is a funny little story. You may or may not want to hear it. But my teacher, Mrs. Jones, was popping out of the class for a while. It was in the year four class. And she'd said, "I'm going out. I don't want anyone to talk." As soon as she went out of the room, of course, everybody started talking. And when she came back, the noise was horrendous. It was evident to me we were all talking. But when Mrs. Jones asked who was the person who was talking, only a few of us put our hands up. But it was evident that it was the rest of the class as well. And she did carry forward her punishment, which was a ruler on the hand. But I know that she was really upset that she was having to carry out her punishment, because she did say, "I'm really sorry," when she'd done it. And it didn't hurt.
She didn't put full effort in.
No full effort required whatsoever. So those little stories that you might tell as a teacher, they become part of that repertoire of storytelling, anecdotal, and the your own personal histories. What's really interesting, I think, is that we shouldn't limit those stories to ourselves,
mm-hmm.
that children have stories to tell as well. And I feel it's really important to give children their storytelling space. They have had things happen to them, even if they are only 5, 6, 7. There are experiences that they've had that they can relate and relate to as well when they hear other children tell stories.
Even those short, funny little things that have happened, you know, at home. It can be tiny, about the time their mum tripped into the paddling pool or something like that. It doesn't need to be a long, convoluted story, does it?
No.
It could be just a funny little incident that's in their heads that they can make a story from, actually.
Absolutely. And children do come in, don't they? And they do say, "Oh, you wouldn't believe what happened at home yesterday." And there might be a story about the dog, or it might be a story about their little brother or sister. There are always these stories that we thrive on.
And should then teachers, so you say that, and yes, absolutely, as children come into the classroom, that's whether you're in primary or secondary, you're hearing these sort of stories of the weekend or what happened in the playground or whatever. Should teachers actually be brave enough to hook onto that sometimes and invite, of course, if it's an appropriate story that the children have said, invite the children to share that with the class and then link that into them the rest of the children thinking about their own stories, and then, you know, how could that then be used to develop into other areas of the English curriculum, like their writing, for example?
Well, there are many schools of thought on this. The one I fully subscribe to is that reading and writing float on a sea of talk. And that comes from Britain. And we didn't actually, sort of historically, start writing immediately. And I don't mean as a child. We didn't start to write without any support. I'm thinking more traditionally and historically. If you think back to cave paintings, cave paintings tell a story. That was how those stories were passed on, maybe. The catching the woolly mammoth or whatever the paintings may be depicting. Having those images to support our storytelling and thinking of that oral tradition of sitting around campfires or sitting around the fires and telling of our experiences, they're really important to making sense of the world and our experiences.
Mm.
I don't know if I fully answered that question that you've asked there, though.
But I think it is, isn't it? It's the first step. If you can get children telling stories, then we move on to the writing. It is the telling and the talk and the addition of ideas, because that's the joy of stories, isn't it? That you may take an actual episode or incident or a day out, but then the storytelling elaborates on that. And of course, you know, going back to the mum fell in the paddling pool. By the way, it's not happened to me. I keep fixating with it. But suddenly they will elaborate on that, won't they? Maybe there was some, they will add bits that didn't actually happen, but make it funnier and the splash bigger and maybe the pool bigger. And then they can start putting maybe pen to paper or whatever and start writing something that they will really engage with. But are there other ways, do you think, as well, that through storytelling, is it just writing that it could help, or are there other benefits in terms of a child's literacy? Because we hear so often that our children are not literate enough. It crops up time and time again in the media, doesn't it? Our children are not literate enough. So how else can telling stories really help their more broad literacy base, if you like?
Looking back over the early years, foundation stage profiles, talk is fundamental. Talk is fundamental to everyone's development, the tuning into the language, the tuning in to grammatical structures, tuning in to bits and bobs of vocabulary that you will hear around you as a child, and then incorporating that vocabulary into your own vocal repertoires. What you're doing with storytelling is a focused direction to support children's linguistic development. So really good for supporting EAL learners as well, but that's another story. Children hearing, being given opportunities to vocalise what they hear, to being given opportunities to consolidate a narrative structure of the mum falling in the paddling pool. And we can support that by giving children those spaces to rehearse their stories. And the more something is rehearsed, the more, as you say, it can become then embellished, because they've got the structure that they're confident with. Well, once you've got something that you're confident with, you can then deviate slightly from that structure and add into it as well, and therefore supporting not just the children's narrative structures, but their linguistic development as well and their use of vocabulary.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a brilliant opportunity, isn't it, to get them to be brave and explore vocabulary and become more confident in their own, I don't know, I think it probably has links into way beyond literacy teaching around other areas of their social development and emotional development. And we should perhaps be embracing their stories more instead of quashing them. And how many times, and I've certainly been guilty of this, so I'll hold my hands up, children are coming into your class, it doesn't matter what age they are, primary children, secondary, even, you know, university students. They're coming into your session and your classroom full of chit-chat, particularly after a break or something like this. And how many times do teachers shush them and sit down? And I think that's because we are so focused as teachers in our mind of getting through the day's plans, because we've got so much to squeeze in content-wise in different subjects, that we don't kind of embrace that moment. And maybe something really funny happened, or really just, I don't know, if there's something great could have happened in assembly or something like that, because apparently sometimes things amazing do happen in assemblies. But it could be, and why? And I think as teachers, we've become quite afraid of seizing the moment. Would you?
I would agree with that, and especially with the requirements within the classroom now, ensuring the children are making progress, the continuous assessment of reading and writing, but there's no real continuous assessment of children's language development. That was big in with the literacy strategy and in the previous curriculum, but it's been sort of squeezed into a page of six paragraphs now in the current the curriculum with the notion of spoken language. And I feel that's a real shame, that we feel so constrained at times, or we can feel constrained if you feel that you've got to adhere to particular requirements. Whereas if we allowed ourselves to exploit children's language development, you're supporting them in so many other different ways as well. When I say language development, I mean language development through giving them a performative space for talk and allowing them to explore their experiences in a more performative environment.
And as teachers, we are all, I would say, a little bit, have tendencies to be a little bit controlling, control freaks. We've planned our lesson, we're going to do this, we've got the learning intention or learning objective set out, and we've decided in our minds that the best way to meet the objective and the learning is, I don't know, for example, to write a letter to a zookeeper. So we have in our mind that's going to be really exciting. And I do believe that whilst we are control freaks, we do try and make it exciting. Not going to surely be exciting for 30 children in the classroom. And therefore, do we in class, when we're getting children to talk or write or do any of the areas to develop their literacy, are we too controlling and therefore to the detriment of getting the best out of those children?
I'm pausing here because I think we do. I think there is that potential. I said a little while earlier, I found the benefits of storytelling quite early on in my career, and I feel quite lucky because of that. It had happened because I was reading the children, it was a year one class, and I was reading them, I think it's Jill Murphy book, On the Way Home, Where Claire Hurts Her Knee. And as I was reading the story, it reminded me of a time when I was six and I had a horrific accident on my scooter. So after I'd read the story, I told the children this. Oh, this takes me back to when I was six and I had this really beautiful scooter. It actually became quite a long and involved story. It was the first time I'd ever told it out loud. And it was the response from the children, because they suddenly realised that they knew a little bit about me as a child. The dynamic in the classroom shifted because they stopped seeing me as this old teacher and were given, because of this little insight into my childhood, and they were imagining me with my red scooter with silver wheels. It was very beautiful. But also what it did was it allowed them to also think about a time when they had had some form of accident. And I could see it was Teresa, a little girl called Teresa. She was lovely. She just turned to somebody and said, oh, do you know what? I did something similar. So why should I then hold the space, is what I went through in my head. So I gave the space to them. To allow them, I feel really gracious in that, to have that conversation with each other about, well, what happened to you then? And they told each other the stories. As the stories were told, we did sort of like a speed dating thing. Mm-hmm. Didn't realise it was speed dating at the time, hadn't been invented. They just went and told their stories to different people. And because they were rehearsing and rehearsing and rehearsing the story, the story became really solid for them. Mm. They remember the sort of day it was, who was involved in the story, the little backstory of why their dad was doing X, Y, or Z in the garden, which was really crucial to and a crucial element of their story. And then it sort of just really took off. Mm. And the following day, they were drawing pictures about their accident. So I thought I would tap into that. And I always feel a lot of my teaching was a series of happy accidents. And that particular episode was a very happy accident. Mm. It allowed the children to have a ready-made story based on their oral rehearsals that they could then write about?
So there are a couple of things there. Firstly, we have our learning objectives. So they could be, for example, I'll be very simplistic in this, to use full stops accurately or to use adjectives. We often prescribe the vehicle too prescriptively, maybe. So we're going to write a letter to the zoo keeper. Really what we're saying is it doesn't matter what the vehicle is, the learning objective can be the same. Give learners choice, let go of that control, and I know it's hard, and also to take risk in doing that, because you have a lot of content, I'm not ever denying that. Teachers are under massive pressure to do this, but you're still going to get the same, if not better, result because you're allowing them to be creative. And also what you've said is the power of sharing. How many times do teachers ask children to write a story or do, you know, even draw pictures of an event solo? Staring at that blank page to some people who are not particularly creative English-wise or feel that they're not or lack confidence, it's a horrific set of instructions. And we need to be sharing more, because not only are they sharing and rehearsing, surely they're stealing from friends vocabulary and ideas that can enhance their understanding and work.
And again, you're touching on something that's very close to my professional heart, that notion of sharing, but also that you've talked about the blank page syndrome. How often have we asked children to just go and write a story? Have you ever tried that? Have you ever tried writing a story with little input, with little idea about the sort of story that you're going to be writing, with no scaffolding, no structure, no narrative form? And yet we do that with our children all of the time. But with this oral rehearsal, with the storytelling, and it doesn't need to be based on personal experience. It can be in a wide range of genres, that you're giving the children the opportunity, as you've said, to share, to rehearse, to create the structure, and to also magpie ideas and to steal language that other people might be using that they might not have come across in their own home or setting or whatever. You just reminded me about Elliot. Elliot was year five. He was a lovely, very sharp, very intelligent young man. And we were in groups, or the classes in groups, and they were sharing their ideas about what they were going to be doing for a particular piece of writing. And Elliot was sitting there very quiet. And I said to Elliot, have you got your idea sorted? And he said, yes, I have, Mrs. Parvin, but I don't want to share because I don't want anyone to steal my idea. And that just really made me smile. But actually, that is something to take into consideration as well. Perhaps some children are already confident with the ideas that they've got. They may want to hold them to themselves, because they feel it's really unique and they want to keep it unique. And I feel that's their prerogative as well.
So it's setting that balance, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
But also part of this is to embrace the notion that learning isn't a mechanistic and linear thing. You know, I'm going to do some input, you're then going to write a story, I can then check to see that you're using adjectives correctly, we move on through the curriculum. That's not actually how learning happens, and we all know that if learning can be much more holistic and much more fun, better learning happens. Yeah, there is that tension, isn't there? Because we're, as teachers, particularly, you know, dare I say, core subject teachers, are under additional pressure because of the way our system is. It's a real tension to let go.
It is a real tension. And to be honest, I used to say this to the students, if I were in school now, I'd like to feel I'd be holding on to the principles that I've developed through my experience in the classroom. And I'd like to feel that I'd still be given enough trust by the people that I work with and for to continue with that same practice. If we're talking about writing, there's a huge amount of tension, expectation of what the children should be doing with the class in the classroom. There's an expectation about their knowledge and understanding about grammatical language and grammatical structures, and about naming the grammatical form. That's important because it is deemed to be so. But unless they're actually using that grammatical form, we're talking about grammar as an abstract thing. So allowing children to play with language orally, that can you can then explore in their writing to be able to give it a name. So if we're talking about compound sentences, or we're talking about fronted adverbials, big bugbear of mine, meanwhile, then they've got something more solid to work with. They have an understanding. They know how to use the language. Now we're going to give that piece of that particular grammatical section, we're going to give it a name. Mm. But they have to know it first.
Not the other way around. Here's fronted adverbial.
Now go and use it.
Now this is what it is. You know, now go and use it. Yeah, so it's turning it on its head. So as we draw our fascinating discussion to an end, if you were to say we've had such a rich discussion about how we should use storytelling, and to those teachers that are listening thinking, yeah, great, could you offer them some really simple advice or steps as to what they could do as of tomorrow, if you like, to start embedding this in their classroom?
Take note, I think, would be my first point, of your interactions with the children. Identify those moments when you are engaging in a form of storying and tap into them. If you recognise that it's something that you don't do, that you are feeling there is not enough time in the day, maybe give yourself 5 minutes one day just to tell a story to the children. Make it simple. Have it as a traditional tale. Tell the children a story, as opposed to reading the children a story. Tell the children a story from your own history. Tell the children a joke or a little anecdote. Make it a conscious thing. Not conscious to the point where you feel stilted or ill-prepared. Maybe write down a little story structure. I've got loads of my little family histories in envelopes upstairs, and I've given them a title. I've got the scooter, and I've got what I call three seeds of a story. Well, actually, I've taken it from Teresa Cremin. Teresa Cremin calls it three seeds of a story. And it's just writing down three little pointers for yourself about where you're going to take your story. So the scooter is my friends, a hill, the hospital.
Mm.
So that's my little story structure. I was severely injured.
Mm. So just have a go. Really.
Have a go.
Have a little play around. And I think what a great time, as we're coming back now, having had many children off for a long time, they're going to have stories to tell about their time, even if it's stories of when they felt lonely and isolated, or great things that they did because they weren't at school. There's lots of stories that could come this, and what a nice way as well to break down. If you're going to tell, as a teacher, a story from your time not being in their classroom with them, I also think telling personal stories helps to break down teacher-child barriers.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's where I was saying earlier about the shift in dynamic with the relationship. There is a definite dropping of a barrier. I'm aware of barriers anyway. So it was really interesting to see those barriers from the children's perspectives going. But you make a really good point about the lockdown and how we might use that or aspects of that experience with the children in the classroom. And it could be a PHSE thing where we're all sitting around listening to our experiences during lockdown, of course being extra especially sensitive to those who might not have had such a good time as well.
But anyway, this has been fascinating. So to draw it up, storytelling is so important. Allow time for it. It isn't a distraction from the curriculum. It can enhance children's literacy, development and their writing skills. And just give it a go. Like, tell a story. Get your children to tell each other a story about their day at the end of the day before they go home. And just have a play and see how it goes, really.
Perfectly summed up, Catherine. Thank you.
It's been fascinating. Thank you ever so much, Tracy.